Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators, where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today we are doing part two with the Weary Teacher. Now, I want to do a gear shift real quick. So, kindness, right? You know, this was the thing that, you know, I think you just, like, you know, it's on your post, in the way you present your work. I think a lot of things about you, like, it's just, it's kind of into your core, right? This kindness stuff that you do. And, you know, the dress had the kindness initiative a part of it. And, you know, all these big things, like, you don't make big things for your students if you don't believe in empowering them through showing them that they're seen and they're heard and that they're loved and cared for and stuff like that. So from your perspective, how do you incorporate this kindness into your classroom? What role does it play as you're going from day to day?
I mean, at the very beginning of the year, that's the very first thing we talk about. Like, it goes into just when we learn our basic classroom procedures. It's, you know, it's on our classroom procedure chart. Like, we're a team. We're a family. We're going to be kind to each other. And if we're not, we're going to figure out the problem. We're going to talk it out. I think it's a huge, you know, we think about the problem, we figure out how to fix it, and then we move on. I'm a true believer that students respond a lot better to kind, positive remarks, whether than if I'm over here just constantly scolding on a kid, he's not even going to want to try to do better, you know? So if, just for example, just in a daily classroom, if I have one kid over here being a little more chatty, instead of getting on to him, I'll look over him and be like, I love how Johnny over here has his book out and he's ready to go. You know, I always try to do the positive comment, and then that kid's like, oh, I want to get a positive comment too. So he'll re-gear, or she will re-gear, and kind of fix that. I'm definitely a true believer with being positive and being kind. It kind of creates that comfortability with between me and my students, the connection we have. Like, I know I've had teachers in my past that, you know, maybe I, you know, college, high school, grad school, that we may really not have had that great connection. So when I was in that classroom, I didn't really feel like, you know, it's just another class. But, you know, you go in, and just personal experience, I have teachers that still contact me today with, you know, and it's a great feeling to have that connection. And I just want to have that with my students as well. I want them to be able to come in here knowing that I'm not going to scream and yell at them, because they may be getting that at home. You know, I'm going to be your friend, but I'm also, you know, I'm also your teacher. And they know, I mean, we have that great communication with each other. But I think it's a huge deal with these kids. Just, they just need someone in their lives to just smile, to give them the, even if they wrote their name and got a 0% on the paper, it's just like, well, you did the paper. That, you know, I always try to find, you know, you didn't come it up and throw it in the trash today like you did yesterday. So thank you. You know, I always try to find the silver lining in something. And I truly believe it really helps with these kids every day, trying to, they come in, they know that. And so I think it sets a great feel in the classroom with everybody.
Yeah, that reminds me of that TED Talk. Man, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but she's I shared one of her things on the podcast page, and a lot of people were connected to it. But she's, you know, she said, talking about this idea of, you know, not doing all the negative stuff, right? It's not minus 10. You know, it's not minus 9. It's plus 1. You got one right on this. You got 9 more to go.
We do the same thing. I think I remember what you're talking about. I've seen that, and I started doing that with our math fact sheets. You know, I give them a paper. They have to answer so many math questions in so many minutes, and when we're done, we grade it. And I always tell them, I don't want to see minus 10, and I don't want to see minus whatever. I always want to see the plus, and even if it's just a 1, I even if it's a plus 0, it's still a plus. I don't want to see minuses. And I think that shifted when I started doing that in the classroom. I think it was really cool, because then the kids don't think about, man, I missed 9. They're like, oh, I got 1 right, you know, and they get excited about it. And so the next time they want to get 2 or 4 or 10, all 10. And I think it really, it shows more, it focuses more on the positive than those negatives.
Yeah, and really, this is a really, I think, important topic for the show and for teachers to hear in general, because there's a lot of conversation both, you know, in America and abroad about, like, you know, there's a lot of this, you know, snowflake talk, right? People talk about, oh, how, you know, our generation, I mean, we're not that different in age. I mean, I'm 27, you're 25. So, you know, we're in that millennial kind of generation or whatever. And, you know, we're always seen, you know, or, you know, there's a lot of derogatory marks were made to that generation and kind of the younger generations and whatnot. But, you know, I don't think they see the side of what we see, you know, like the kids that are being raised in the world that they're put in is so violent.
Yes.
And there's so much trauma on so many levels and all these things. And the fact that, like, what you said just then, not giving them the negative, trying to put the positive in there, right? Giving them kudos for even getting one right or none right and attempting it. That, you know, yeah. I think in some circles that is seen as, like, you know, the weakness. But I think that's really the strength of what we do. Like, we need this connection to build and to, like, empower people rather than break them down.
And to be honest, even if it was sign of, oh, they're weak and things like that, I don't care, because honestly, because if they get that positive comment from me that they spelled their name correct today but they got a zero of a paper, that may be the only positive comment they get that day, you know. And elementary, it may not, you know, is a huge touchy subject, but even with middle schoolers, and I'm sure you know the depression they can feel and what that leads to, you know, that one positive comment could completely change that kid's life, that kid's world. And, you know, even at just such a young age, I'm like, that's the positive comment that I have to give them today to make them smile. And that's what I'm going to do. Whether you consider it weak or not, I'm going to do it, because that's just how I truly feel. And I want them to feel, even if it's just that one tiny, tiny, tiny positive comment, that one tiny thing that shows them that I care about them, I want them to feel that.
I think where some of that rhetoric comes from is, I think it comes from, like, a divorce from really, like, the humanity of education. Like, there's a weird push in some areas for teachers just to be, you know, well, scores, test, and, you know, progress. But really, you know, especially in the younger years, like in sixth grade, totally. I think it, once it gets to high school, it changes a little bit, but it's still, it's a people profession, right?
Yeah.
And we're there to, like, teaching kids and teaching content are two separate things, but teachers have to do both, or we're going to leave them empty in some areas.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a huge deal. And I feel like teachers everywhere, I feel like, struggle with it. I mean, we're given these standards, we're giving all these different things that we're told we have to teach these kids. And I'm like, you know, this year we have, you know, this guideline we're supposed to go on just in Oklahoma that these kids have to know this by this date. And I'm like, this isn't even a standard that these kids have to know until the end of the year. And so, and then they're expected to take a test on it and make a passing percent and master it by the second month of school. I'm like, that's not how it works. You know, it may not click until they get to the end of the year. I'm sorry, but telling time to the half hour may not click to my poor little second grader until he gets to middle school. I mean, it just, at some point in time, it'll click to them, even though it may not necessarily be in my classroom, you know. And you just, a personal experience, I've done that, you know. Things may not have clicked to me until I've gotten into college, and I'm like, that's why that has to do that, you know. And it does. Eventually it'll hit me, and I know it now. And so when we're told as teachers that they have to know this and they have to do this at this certain way, and, you know, it's hard, because I'm like, if you want that to be done, I just sometimes just want to be like, well, come into my classroom and do it and let me know how that goes, kind of thing. Because, you know, and like we've talked about, every classroom is different, you know. So what's working in my room is not going to work right across the hall from one of my partner teachers, and vice versa. What works today is not going to work tomorrow. You know, they're going to master this assignment today, but come in a different attitude tomorrow and fail it. You know, I think definitely knowing the students and knowing what they're capable of, rather than just seeing what they're putting down on paper and on all these state tests, is two totally different things.
Yeah. And there's, you know, the conversation of, you know, we did an episode called Should Teachers Hate Standardized Tests? with a guy named Jeff Farley. He's become one of my good friends. He's a teacher down in Southern Texas. We've never met in person, but he, you know, his answer was, no, we shouldn't, but we shouldn't also obsess over it. You know, don't sit here and make this test like this, this evil beast that it that people have turned it into. You know, do your job, right? Go into there, engage the students, teach lessons that matter, and then that stuff will come eventually. You know, like it's not like teachers, like we have this pressure that comes from down top or whatever, or we do it to ourselves. And really, like, our jobs are more than trying to get our kids to pass a state test.
Yeah, I definitely. We're definitely more than, you know, and I've said it before, they're definitely more than just their teachers. We're their friends. We're the, maybe the only person that day that gives them attention. I mean, we're so much more than just a teacher.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the big differences I've seen in my classroom, right? The way I get a kid who gets to sixth grade and who has never read a full book on his own, the way I get that kid to read a novel and to keep reading and to find stuff after that initial book isn't because I sat with them and did a specific lesson to tackle, you know, his fluency issues or something like that. It was because I built a relationship over time. Always prove that I was a trustworthy adult and that they can trust me when I hand them a book, that I'm not trying to get them to do something for a grade, but I genuinely want them to enjoy what they're doing.
Yeah. And that finds the connection between you and your students. You know, reading is a huge thing. A lot of kids do not, I mean, especially in the elementary age, they don't have the patience to just sit alone, let alone sit and just read a book. And not all, I mean, I have kids that love to read. But it's finding that connection with the kid. So if that kid is obsessed with football, I'm going to go find a football magazine and let him sit there and read that for a little bit. He may not even think that, oh, I'm reading. He's excited to find these facts about football. You know, I have a kid this year. It's so funny, but he's very obsessed with the whole Titanic and the history of it. And so I went to Scholastics and I bought some Titanic books. And he will sit and he will read. And that's about the only time of day he's really quiet, but he'll do it. You know, and I think finding those connections through what, no matter what grade you teach, is a huge deal, especially when it comes to reading. I mean, if the kid loves cooking, go find a cookbook. You know, it may not be a test they have to take it over, but they're reading, even, and they may not even be thinking that they're reading.
That's like my love language, man. I love books are so they're so powerful in so many ways, but text in general, like if you can get a kid to connect to whatever text that they're interested in, I mean, they're going to develop and they're going to get those skills that, you know, are in our standards that we have to meet and things like that. But if they're not reading on their own, and if they're not having success with text, they're never going to reach what everyone wants them to reach.
No, because they don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And you can't force, you really cannot force a child to do something. It's just you can't do it. So if they don't want to do it, they're not going to do it. And so then it falls back on us like, oh, well, you didn't teach them this. Well, where do you draw the line in a way?
This is the makeup of the conversations that we should all be having with each other in terms of looking at what we're doing, looking at our practices, looking at how we're approaching each situation, and have people that go, okay, well, how can we engage them more there? You know, how are we letting them down by not doing this, this, or this? You know what I mean? Rather than saying, you know, this is our lesson, this is the test, and they failed the test, and so now they have to do this. And it's like, no, like there is literally, there's so many variables to what is going on.
Yeah, and I agree. And kind of off that, it's like, you know, we have all these standards we have to teach them. And little Sally over here is just, bless her heart, not getting the standard in math. But I've worked with her and she is mastering all these standards in reading. Like, again, looking at those positives and not the negatives, it's like, yeah, she may not be fully mastering the subject in math, but she is an A+ student in reading. And last year she couldn't, you know. And I think turning that, and then you can just develop, okay, you got this. Now let's, you know, and go slowly, inch by inch, while you can, then work it into those other subjects. But definitely, like, again, just focusing on those positives that they got an F on this paper in math, but look over here what they're doing in science. Like, how great. Look at this robot he just built for, you know, whatever reason, or he or she. And I think that's a really cool thing. It's just, you know, not everybody in this world is going to be great at math. Not everyone's going to be a great reader, you know. Not everyone's going to be great at science. So focusing on what they are good at to me, just me personally, I don't always want to be told I'm not good at telling time. I'm not good at this. I need to work harder on this. I need to work that. I would want to hear, well, you're great at, you know, you did really good on this science paper. That's awesome. And then it kind of sparks us like, oh, I can do this. So I'm going to go in and try harder on this subject and so on and so on.
How does the focus that you have on making sure that you're approaching things in a positive way, how does that come about in your students? Like, do you have specific procedures and behaviors for them to work on their kindness, or how do you work on their behavior when it comes to focusing on this positive side of things?
I think a huge thing that I do in my classroom, we do a lot of teamwork activities, so they are kind of, I hate to use the word forced, but they're put in those situations where they have to work together, even if it's just a simple spelling assignment. And when they're doing that, I mean, at the beginning of the year, I model a lot of what it looks like to be kind, what it looks like to give a positive comment, what it doesn't look like. And, you know, I give examples of that. So pretty early on, and once they get to my age, you know, they're 7 to 9 years old, so they know what's right and wrong. They know what is not a nice word and what is a nice word. But definitely putting in those teamwork situations where they're, okay, you're not, you know, and I'll if I hear a team kind of having a little tiff with each other, okay, pause on the assignment, figure out what's wrong, and then try again. And it's pretty instant. They're like, you know, I'm sorry, let's, you know, because they're fighting over who wants to read question number two, you know. So, like, I'm very fortunate this year to have a classroom that doesn't really have arguments with each other. So it makes it easier, you know. And I'm not saying next year, you know, I may have a couple kids that just really don't like each other and it'll be a harder situation. But this year I'm very fortunate to have these students who just already have it in them to be kind and, you know, just promote positivity. So if it is just a tiny little argument like that, it's a simple redirection and they get right back to it.
I think a lot of that's reflected on you and just how better you probably are about setting those expectations by your behavior. Because, you know, I found that, you know, watching teachers that I watch here or reflecting on my practices is that the better I've become about controlling what I say intentionally and how I hold myself and how I demonstrate myself is like, oh man, my kids are really great this year. And I'm like, you know what? Probably a lot of that is because, like, I'm just better at doing what I, you know, modeling what I want them to do.
Exactly. And they, even middle schoolers, even at the older age, I mean, they look up to us. They truly do. And if they see me getting on to a student for something as small as just not, you know, breaking their pencil, or maybe it's something more, maybe they're hitting another kid, or maybe it's something like that. But if they see me go and just really get onto them, how can I expect them not to do it? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. How can I expect my students to not lash out at another student if I do the same thing? So setting those examples, showing them what I want every day. And sometimes it's really hard, you know, sometimes I have to bite my tongue to say, you know, Johnny, stop, you know, kind of thing. But I still have to turn and be like, Sally, I love how you're sitting there working quietly. You know, I really have to just do it sometimes. And it's harder some days than it is others, but definitely setting that example, like you just said, just showing them what you want them to do rather than just acting one way and telling them that they have to be another. Is if you actually just get up here and that's just what you do because that's who you are, they will see that. And as especially younger minds will pick up on that and they just kind of do the same thing.
Yeah. One of the big changes I made this year was I made an explicit choice to do D halls this year. And it's nothing like terrible, but a consequence because I didn't want, you know, I didn't want to send kids to have the principals deal with them. They deal with so much crap. You know, and in middle school, there's all kinds of things that go down all the time. And I was like, I want to be able to handle this in my own space. And by doing that, I was like, okay, I got to, you know, this is going to be the hill that I use. And I'm not going to use it in an angry way. It's not going to be a spiteful thing. It's a consequence for a behavior. And I'm not going to yell or get angry. And there's two things that have happened because of this. And one, students have said multiple times, they're like, you know, Chastain, you don't get angry. Like, you don't yell. So, like, you know, that's been a conscious choice, but they show up to the D halls and they know that it's not me bullying them or punishing them in a super negative way. They know that I'm holding them accountable for a behavior that our social contract that they've broken, you know? Right. And I think that's a super hard line to walk in some ways.
Yeah. And I think, and, you know, I tried it the same way, and it's harder with little kids. It can be, I mean, not really harder. It can be just as simple as, you know, well, you're going to have to stand for recess today. And that's like a huge deal to my little second graders. But like you just said, you know, your students don't think that you never yell, you never get angry. And that's awesome. That shows just what a positive teacher you are. But especially in those older grades, when they get to the point or they do something where they have to sit out or do the D-Hall that you were talking about, it's more of a, man, they don't want to disappoint you because you're not always yelling at them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're up there every day constantly getting on to them, or if I'm up here every day constantly getting on to them, if I have to get on to them again, it's just another punishment. You know what I mean? So if it's a one-time kind of, it's a shock factor to them in a way. You don't want them to feel disappointed, but in a way they kind of get that, like, they don't want to disappoint you. And if they get to that point, then they feel bad. And I think that is more of a punishment, in parentheses, you could say, than anything you could ever really, like, go to the principal's office. I think that is more than that.
Yeah, I don't think enough can be said about controlling those aspects of your room, because when I made, you know, big decisions about I wanted to go bigger and better this year and make my, you know, I wanted to do room transformations that totally changed what my room was. You know, I'm a huge cave, and I made, you know, lasers and sci-fi and CIA stuff and like all this other stuff, as crazy as I could go. Yeah. And but I was like, doing that, I need to be also super stern in my expectations and always hold them to that, because, you know, I tell them, I'm like, we work hard, but, you know, we play hard, but we work hard too. And we don't get to do the play. We don't get to have all this stuff if we're not going to be in control. And so every once in a while, you know, my students got to be reminded of that. You know, the really hyper ones are the ones that move in to the school.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it takes them a while. They're like, oh, Chastain's fun. He's got lights. He's dancing out in the hallways. And then the first moment they push a little too far, they're like, oh.
Yeah. And I think a huge thing with that is consistency and accountability. Like, if one time you let that slip, especially your age, they're going to know that they can let it slip. You're going to let it slip again one time in the future, you know. And definitely keeping that consistency in your punishments and for every student is a huge deal, even in the younger grades. Because if there's been a time like, oh, well, you're staying in for recess, and then I'm like, just go play because I need a break too, they're going to know, like, well, tomorrow I can push your buttons a little more, and you're not going to make me stay in. So that consistency is huge.
Do you find – was it hard for you to do the punishment side? Because for me, like I am not, like, a punishing type of person. Like, you know, in my first year was awful, so I had all kinds of things going on. But, you know, after that, like, it was – like punishing and, you know, and the consequence, I guess, rather than punish, right? It was hard to do the consequence piece steadily. And then as the year went on, like, you know, I could feel like, oh, well, you know, they're pushing boundaries, like you said, and they're doing this and that. And like, it took a couple years for me to finally feel comfortable in doing it. Did you feel like that, or was it more natural for you?
It's getting better to where I don't feel as bad when I have to get on to them. Set little kids, for sure, the moment you get on to them, the waterworks come. And that really pulls on my heartstrings at times. I have a really hard time with that. But that definitely, in the beginning years, I was like, oh, it's okay, don't cry, I'm sorry. You know, and I felt myself like, no, that's not how it should be. But like, I didn't actually do that. But in my mind, I'm like, don't cry, don't cry. But now it's easier for me to be like, well, you did the wrong thing. This is, you know what you should do, and you didn't do it. So this is the consequence, and that's just how it's going to be. So I'm definitely better at not holding my ground, but being able to give that consequence to them and not feel like I shouldn't be doing it or something like that. But definitely in the beginning, it was pretty hard, especially in the younger ages, because when their waterworks started coming, then I felt bad. I'm like, you know.
No, I can only imagine. I mean, every once in a while we'll have kids do that, but they kind of get – in middle school, it's more of like an angry type of thing. They'll try to hurt you with words. Like, I get a lot of, you know, I hate this class. You know what I mean? It's like – even that, like, I love – I like building stuff for people. So when they're like, oh, you know, I hate this, you know, it does like, oh, dang. So you're going there. But anyway, okay, I have two more questions for you.
Yeah.
I know I'm holding you. We both got to get home to our families. Fine. They're just like, come home.
Yeah.
One, so you have the page called The Weary Teacher.
Yeah.
And what's the goal of this? Because you know, I love scrolling through it and you post stuff up there and stuff. But when you created this, kind of what is the... What's the message kind of behind this thing you're building up?
I think the main idea of the whole deal was just to share ideas and receive different ideas from people, even if it's just within Oklahoma, across, you know, just the country or around the world. I think having that connection with other teachers, seeing that, okay, we all can relate in this in so many ways, or if I have a question or something and then I make those connections with those teachers so I can message them like, well, how do you do this? So having that, the big part is having that connection to share creative ideas, to share curriculum ideas, and, you know, get inspiration from other teachers as well, because there's so many teachers out there that are just amazing that I would love to get some information on. And then the other thing is, you know, I do those giveaways, and I think it's a huge deal to give back to those teachers. I've sold those calendars, and 100% profit went completely back to educators, because, you know, we don't make a whole lot. We don't do this. And it's great to have that. I know how I feel when I, you know, get that appreciation from other people. And I just want to be able to do that for another teacher. So even if it's just a simple t-shirt, giving that giveaway back to a teacher to let them know that they're appreciated and loved in their profession that they're doing, no matter, you know, and it's a hard, tiring profession, which is where the weird teacher came from. It's we're exhausted, we're worn out and stuff like that, but we're still have to be putting this like happy face on and energetic and constantly, or we're going to lose the engagement of our students. So have, like, again, just having that connection. How do they do this? What worked for you? What didn't work for you? And sharing those ideas back and forth as the main focus of this whole page.
All right. So final question for you. Many teachers want to do big projects and grand things, and they want to increase the kindness in their room, and they want to do these projects and all of the wonderful stuff that you're doing over there. What would be your advice for a teacher listening to you right now? You know, America, Japan, Australia, you know, wherever they're listening, right? What would you say to them if they wanted to kind of do some of the stuff that you're doing over there in your neck of the woods?
I think a huge thing is just make it a priority. I found pretty simple, if that's something that I'm truly passionate about, but then I kind of put it aside, it's not going to really happen. So definitely making it a priority and coming in with that positive attitude, being prepared. You know, these projects, they do take time and they're very time consuming. I keep pretty busy, but I have fun doing it, so it doesn't ever seem like a chore or a hassle that I have to do these things.
I think that's a great answer, because if it feels like a chore, you're probably not doing the right thing. There's nothing more powerful than that. And that's a perfect place to end on, Haley. I got to thank you so much for being a part of Teach Me Teacher.
Thank you for having me. It was so much fun.
You are an amazing human being. But before I let you go, I want you to, where can people find you if they want to talk to you, give you a shout out?
They can just follow me on my Facebook page at The Weary Teacher, or you can search Haley Kerfman, and it's an open website, or on my Instagram.
All right, everyone. That was Haley Kerfman, The Weary Teacher. She is absolutely phenomenal. I cannot say it more. You can hear it in the excitement of the conversation. I mean, I love podcasts like this because it's literally just us having a conversation. You know, we're not selling a book. We're not selling a product. This is what Teach Me Teacher was built on. It's what Teach Me Teacher will continue to be. I love these episodes, and I love giving you guys these episodes, because real teachers talking about real things is what you guys, this is what we need. We need more conversations like this. So it was fantastic to have her on. She was absolutely amazing. Go out and join or like her Weary Teacher page, both on Instagram and Facebook. She is phenomenal. You will not regret using your time to go out and reach out to her. Give her a shout out for the Teach Me Teacher community. For everything else, ladies and gentlemen, go to teachmeteacherpodcast.com, where you can get all of our episodes without downloading a single thing, or you can go to iTunes, hit that subscribe button. You can get all of our episodes delivered to you as they are released weekly, which is now our schedule. And then once you've listened to a few episodes or after this episode, go hit us a review on iTunes. Those reviews help us find more teachers just like you and help more teachers and grow and become the community that we are coming to be. It's amazing, guys. Thank you for listening. And as always, have a good one.